in the drink.
Well, they take some risks out there, don't they, on
they
those
do.
Reefs north yep. of Trigg.
That's right, up in the Waterman's.
One or two have been lost in
yes,
different
Methams.
Times.
Yep.
As McGoffin runs in and he bowls to O'Brien, who plays defensively back along the offside of the wicket. There's no run. That completes the over by McGoffin. Thornley is 38, O'Brien 38, 17 extras, 3 for 221 is the New South Wales total. 5 off that over from McGoffin, none for 38 off 13.
Are you a bit of a snorkeler, Wong? Do you
yeah.
sort of snorkel? I meant snorkel in the ocean.
North has started a new over at the WACA. Someone please help me. And they take a single off. I think what was the third or fourth ball. Thornley is 39. O'Brien is 38. There are 17 extras. 3 for 222 is the total. I have a mask and a snorkel and a pair of flippers.
Well, that's what I mean.
That's what you mean.
I've got to go home.
North bowls to O'Brien, who turns the ball forward of square leg. The batsmen think about a single. Did they? Yes, they did take a single. 3 for 222. Thornley 39. O'Brien is 39. There are 17 extras. My. Oh, golly. North is operating from the northern end without his snorkel. And he comes in and bowls to Thornley, who's on the back foot. And he plays the ball to Voges at cover, and there's no run. It's 3 for 223 at the WACA ground.
6 years ago, Glenn Foreman, the eldest son of the late Wally Foreman, embarked on a very ambitious project to write his father's story as a gift to Wally's first grandchild, Charlotte, who tragically our Wally never met but would have loved. It was an enormous task, but I'm not sure even Glenn had any idea how huge it would be when he started. But now the book is finished. It will be launched at the end of July, and I know many of you are looking forward to reading the Wally Foreman story, The Legend from Bruce Rock. We talked to Glenn when he'd finished his draft, and now we welcome him back in the studio that bears his dad's name as he's holding the published copy in your hand. Hello to you again, Glenn.
G'day, Jill. How are you?
I'm very well and very touched. It's so lovely to have you here. What did the feel like when you first held that book in your hand?
There were all of these sort of moments that I built up into my head that I was thinking this will be the moment where it all dawns on me about how relieved and you know proud I'm going to feel. But the reality was totally different because when I ordered the first copies to review them, before they even arrived, I already knew there was a mistake in there that I needed to correct. So when it actually arrived and I was holding it in my hand, it was like this big anticlimax because I thought I might as well just throw this on the fire because I know there's these errors that I need to correct and then get the proper one back. So, you know, the whole process of that kind of it takes away this having never written a book before. I thought there's going to be this one moment. But there is no such thing as one moment because there's all these little things that happen along the way.
And what a massive effort this has been and what a huge journey. Tell us about what you had in mind at the start and what you've been through.
Yeah. What I had in mind at the start was I had nothing in mind. I had nothing in mind. Brett McCarthy, the former editor of the Sunday Times and now at the West, he said to me one day, you should write his biography. And so I just said, no worries. you know, and
great idea.
Yeah, great idea. And you mentioned it in the intro. I've often said, had I known, I'm really glad that this was the first book I've ever written, because had I known how much was going to be involved, how much of my life it was going to consume, I'm not sure. Of course, it still would have been important to me, but I'm not sure I mentally could have got myself up to get through it, because, you know, when I started this book, I'd only just met my now wife. In between the time of starting it and finishing it, we've had two kids, we've got married, I've changed jobs, and you're trying to do all of this around all of those life milestones, and there's a lot of challenges to that. Not to mention the emotional impact and the challenges of writing the book itself.
Yeah. Now, tell us about that emotional impact. What is it like writing about your father after you have lost him, someone that so many other people love so well?
I think if I'm to be really honest, I think I'm probably still finding out what that impact was. And I don't mean to overplay that, but if you think about what a biography actually involves, so when this is on my dad, who's passed away. Now, I've done probably a minimum of 100 interviews. Every one of those interviews goes for probably an average of an hour. Rule of thumb for a journalist is however long the interview goes for, you double it. That's how long it takes to transcribe. So that's 300 hours of talking about sitting in a corner by myself with headphones on, listening to and transcribing interviews talking about the same subject matter, my deceased dad, over and over and over again before I even start writing. That's just 300 hours of the interview process, and then I have to start writing it. So I think I'm introspective enough to acknowledge that it has impacted me. I know that my personality's changed. Sometimes I have a tendency to look on the negative side, and I can react very emotionally, and you know, these sort of things. I wasn't always like that. I might have been a little bit of a happier person, but in the end, I'm now coming out the other side of that, and of course, that entire process, the silver lining of it is that it has helped me deal with Dad passing away to begin with. So it has certainly had its challenges, but it was also an amazing experience.
Glenn Foreman, our guest on ABC Radio Perth and WA. I'm Jill. Glenn is Wally Foreman's, the late Wally Foreman's son, and the author of The Legend from Bruce Rock, the Wally Foreman story. What did you learn about your dad?
This was a really important lesson, and that was that he was human. I think it's really easy... it's really easy to get sucked into believing that your parents are heroes. And that's fine to hero-fy them, if that's a word. But if you're putting them on a pedestal like they're flawless, it's not an attainable goal, and you're setting yourself up for failure. And so I think the most important lesson for me throughout this was realizing how normal a person Dad actually was. You know, He didn't do well in high school. He did so poorly that he couldn't go to university or anything like that, and his marks weren't good enough to apply for a cadetship for the West. He got knocked back twice for a cadetship for the West. I'm not saying this is a good thing, but you know, he got done for drunk driving at one stage. You know, that he had challenges with depression. He used to also act emotionally sometimes. All of these things create an actual human being instead of, and I wouldn't, you know, particularly the school one, I really wish he had bloody told me when he was still around, because I was no good at high school. And so instead he just got angry at me But I now realise that he was getting angry at me because he saw himself in my failures or in my challenges. But we never had the chance to discover these things together, I suppose. But this process has revealed them to me. And so it's really nice to now... it takes nothing away from how much people love Dad and what he achieved and all of that. But what it does do is add this other dimension that paints him as a real person that is someone to aspire to rather than something that's unattainable.
And how important is that? I mean, you were very young when you lost your dad, and so was your brother Mark. And I know how terribly hard it was on your mum. To have someone who, you know, is your dad, you're trying to cope with that grief, and he is a legend in Western Australia. Everyone loves him, so you must be constantly bombarded with other people's grief and memories of your father as well. So how important was it to you to understand him on those levels?
Yeah, it was really important, but it was also a challenge because you have all of these really nice things from that people say about him and... then I'll try, in terms of writing a biography, I'm trying to quantify that, and it's difficult to quantify when someone says he was just a good bloke or he was great. You know, why was Dad so great? Oh, he was just a good bloke. Finding all the pieces to his life that made him a good bloke was the challenge. But absolutely, and I've written in the introduction, in my author's note at the start of the book, that those messages from people, especially the general public, whether they had profile or no profile, they were so important to us.
And you
they
still
were
have so them.
Yeah, we still have them. Yeah, the ABC gave them to us in a big box. So they're at Mum's house. Yeah.
And it wasn't just people. I mean, there's so many people that your dad worked with really closely, who are close friends, Brian Cousins, Dennis Cometti, I mean, all of those sort of people. But it was some of the more ordinary people you spoke to that gave you some of the best insights.
Oh, I loved them. And they were the ones that... they were the ones that actually had the power to bring me to tears. You know, when I'm sitting there, headphones on, transcribing interviews, I try to sort of, I had no choice. I had to try to go into this other world where I was just a robot just tapping out words instead of listening to what was being said. But the ones that really got to me was some like his, like Brian Kilminster, one of his childhood friends from Bruce Rock, who he went to school with, and you know, Kay Jukic, who was the same. You know, some of the things that they would say, and just the way that they said it, it was so emotional. But then there's the other side of this project, and this is really special to me. It actually doesn't have much to do with Dad, but what the project allowed me to do was. There's a few people that have passed away since I started writing this, you know. So my granddad was one, Ken Judge, obviously another, but Brian Kilminster, you know, he passed away. Fred Miller, who was a friend of Dad's, and what this project's allowed me to do is I was able to share with their families the audio interview that I did with those people, and you know, I say ignore my comments and my crappy voice on there, have this as a gift because it's something that our family has such an abundance of, is this endless audio and video of Dad. To be able to share that, you know, on more than one occasion, the people that receive it have broken down in tears because they just don't have that. And so that was a really special part of this project that kind of has nothing to do with the book itself, yeah.
What did your mum think of it?
She's still getting through it, as you could imagine. She's really proud. She's very happy. She loves the way that it's written, the premise that it's written to Charlotte. But as you can imagine, it's also a very challenging read for her, a very emotional read for her. So she's still getting through it.
Yeah. And have you sat down and read the book since it's been... A book?
bits and pieces of it because I reckon I've genuinely probably read it, oh, I don't know, maybe 20 times in its different forms. And plus, there's a couple of different versions. There's one just for the family, you know, that I've written a special note at the end for Charlotte, and then there's this one. So, I haven't read it from cover to cover again for the 21st time, but I've read it a fair bit.
Very close to you, Mark. Glenn, it's an amazing, amazing project, and you've just brought so many memories of your dad back for all of us as well, and we love that. Thank you. Good work.
No worries. And you know, there's so many people that have helped along the way, and I realised how much goodwill for Dad there is out there. You know, like your friends that you have come in, Barb from Boffin's Books and Dimmix in Garden City. Lockie down in Albany at Paperbucks. There's just all of these people that come out of the woodwork because of what Dad meant to them, and it's very special.
Well, Mark says on text, Glenn was in my homeroom class when I was teaching. Wally wrote me a letter thanking me for my support of Glenn. This acknowledgement kept me in teaching. Good on you, Glenn, for your efforts on the book. Very healing, I imagine.
I know who that was, and he put up with a lot of rubbish from me during my high school years. So, yeah, thank you.
More like your dad than you might have thought. And lots of other listeners. Daniel, our family loved and respected Wally and really miss him. We're only radio listeners. He was very special to us. I don't know how to explain why, just that he was someone we connected with. You must hear that a lot.
I do. And that was, it was trying, the journalist in me then had to try and find out why. And that was, you know, there's the 80-20 rule in journalism, where 80% of what you do never sees the light of day. It's only the 20%. And the enormous amount of research that actually went into writing the 550 pages is was all about that, trying to work out what I write and how I describe those feelings.
And Daniel, like, you know, so many other listeners, they might not be able to describe or explain that connection, but Wally, your dad, was exactly who he was on radio, wasn't he? So those connections are real ones.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, a lot of the notes from listeners started with "I never met Wally, but ... and it was, there was no difference between Dad on air and Dad in person, and so the person that they heard was the person that they knew.
Glenn Forman is the author of The Legend from Bruce Rock, The Wally Forman Story. Thank you.
No worries. Thanks, Julie.
Now, it will be launched at the end of July, and you'll be able to pick up a copy from your favourite bookshop. Now, we're going to play a tune, but a lot of listeners have asked for this particular piece, which I'm sure you'll remember. Sabrina in for gardening shortly.
I'm very nervous, actually. I'm just watching this fella doing it as though he's done it 1,000 times. So this is a watershed moment in my life, you know. I mean, I've only ever had one bank account in my life, one passbook, and I closed it the other day. I've actually had this card for 3 weeks and I've been too frightened to use it. I don't know. I'm trying to learn while I'm watching, but I'm not doing too well here, Alicia.
Are you afraid of it?
Totally intimidated. Yeah. In fact, there's another guy in the queue now, so I'm going to let him go first because I didn't learn anything from that young bloke. He went too fast.
Perhaps you could ask this man to take it a little slower for you.
Yeah, well, I think he looks more my age, so I think he is likely to take his time over it.
One bank account now, Willie. Why'd you decide to close it?
Well, it was getting increasingly difficult to see through the weekend with the money that I'd drawn out on Friday. Thought I really needed to do something about that. And I've been through the grieving process, having closed this down, and I've said goodbye to all the tellers, all the ladies that I like to go and talk to on a Friday afternoon.
And now you're getting ready to talk to a machine.
Exactly. I'm just frightened I'm going to lose my fingers or my card or something.
Wally's about to undergo a mammoth moment in his life here. He's going to use a teller machine for the first time.
He's pulling a leg.
Unfortunately, it's true.
Is it really?
Have you got any advice for him as a first-time user of a teller machine?
Join the human race, Wally. That's what I'd say.
No, just don't rush it, mate. Just like sex, don't rush it.
Make sure you got money in your account.
I hadn't thought of that. There's another problem.
Do it slowly and really don't tell anybody your PIN, particularly wives or anything like
What's
that.
What's the PIN? Oh, you've got a PIN number. Oh, I've got a number. Yeah, that's my PIN number.
Now, in your right hand, Wally, you've got your card.
I've got my card.
That's kind of important. Now, in your left hand, you've got something else. What's that?
Yeah, these are the instructions I was given by my 10-year-old son.
Now, can you read them?
Not very well. But that's a problem in itself. This is the same young boy who said to me a few weeks ago when I asked him if he would record a footy match for me because I can't on the VCR, just shook his head in frustration and said, Dad, now hang on, I've got to work out where to put it. Is that it?
No, yeah.
Where does it go?
A little bit lower.
That one?
Just under the flashing light.
In there?
Just under the flashing light.
In there?
That's it, but a little, yep, yeah, yeah.
How about that? I got it in. Now, please enter your personal identification number. Where? Oh, here. I didn't see. You know that was serious. That's a worry, isn't it? Heavens above. Please. Do you need time? I sure do. To continue transaction. Please enter your personal identification. I just did that.
You were a bit slow.
Oh,
so
okay.
It's asking you to do it again.
Now, do I have to push something else? Enter, perhaps. Oh, there you go. Enter. I guess that.
Just read the cues there. The screen will tell you.
Your transaction. What does that mean? Please select your transaction. Oh, withdrawal. Savings, credit card or check. I wouldn't have a clue.
Why don't we try savings?
I'll try savings. Heavens above. Select fast cash or enter amount. Oh, how much will I need, Alicia? Do you need more time? Oh, heavens above. I'll go for 200. That'll save me trying to... Would you like a printed receipt for this transaction? Please... I'll say yes. Transaction being processed. Please wait. Remember, quickly secure your cash. Someone likely to whack me over the head. Don't let anyone know or find out your PIN. Okay,
yeah,
no, I haven't done
taking
that.
Some time.
I've got my card. One, two, and it's all there. That is amazing. Haven't I taken a step forward in time?
Congratulations.
I'm actually quite proud of myself.
I think you should be.
What about the queue behind us? I've just been thinking, actually, what I should have done then was drawn out everything I had in the account and just store it in my pillow or something, and then I wouldn't have to go through that again.
So is technology your friend now, Wally?
I think we're becoming a little closer. I think we're starting to get to know each other a little better, but long way to go, Alicia.
You're listening to ABC Radio Perth and WA.
Oh, Glenn Foreman, just signed my copy of The Legend from Bruce Rock, the Wally Foreman story. I'm dying to see what it says. We'll get some news headlines. Rebecca Dollery in the studio. Hello, Vic.
Hello, Jill-O. The McGowan government.